Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back for another episode of TechNet Radio in our Accelerating DevOps with the Cloud series. We're in episode 9. Today, we're going to be talking about scaling cloud applications. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft in the U.S. And my special co-host today is Young Cho. Hey, Young, how's it going?
Hello, Keith. Hello, everyone from Washington, D.C. It's a great day. It's a lot of cloud outside. It's a good day to talk about something. You know what I mean?
It's a lot of cloud outside and a lot of cloud inside for us.
That's
right.
Right.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Young. I know we've got a ton of stuff to talk about in terms of cloud and scaling applications. And when we think about capacity in the old days, in the on-premises world, you know, it was a really kind of time-consuming process, and in many cases, we were trying to forecast future capacity needs for 6 months, a year, 18 months, a couple of years, so that we could buy the hardware we needed in our data center. A lot of environments either ended up on one side or the other, because you always are taking kind of that worst-guess approach of capacity needs in the on-premises world. Either you overbuy and you spend too much, or you underbuy and you don't buy enough, and you wrestle with some utilization issues. As we move forward, Young, looking at the cloud, how do you think about planning capacity for new applications?
Well, capacity is actually very critical in IT, right? Because you gotta kind of know what you need in order to fulfill all your requests. So traditionally, what we do is we sort of every so often, right, we're sitting in a meeting, then for 2 days, right, you get the 20 people from different department, and then we talk about it, and then we project what kind of a capacity need we want or we are going to fulfill. If we project that we're going to grow this much, and then, you know, we're going to fulfill 80% of it or 90% or 75% of it, right, that's where we're going to kind of do the threshold, and we're going to buy the hardware, right? And so you spend money, you go out and order all those boxes and ship it in, and you configure it and put it in production, right? And so that's how you do capacity planning and then follow up and implement it. So every so often you come back and project and you buy hardware. Every so often you come back and project and you buy hardware. So that's kind of a traditional way to do it. It's pretty expensive. It's a tedious process. Now, the interesting thing is, if you're in IT, if that's still how you do it, I don't think you can survive, because today, everything's so dynamic, right? I mean, Keith, you know, you carry, how many data entry devices do you have in your house and you carry? You probably carry a dozen, because I see you got to use like 3 phones at a time, right?
Yeah, I have at least 14. Yeah.
So there's a lot of data entry devices. Kind of the point I want to make is there's a lot of data going on, right? Not to mention today, this whole economy is really driven by social media and emotion and current events, right? So things happen very quickly. It comes and goes. So even though you project that perhaps your growth curve is going like that, the actual data coming in or requests coming in or your business opportunity coming in may look totally different like this. Mm-hmm. Then what do you do, right? Because traditionally you buy hardware and there's a 5-year capital expense, right, you dedicate it in. And then you kind of just try to kind of make the best use of it. And then, and sort of like if your prediction is correct, then great. If not, then what do you do, right? So basically, if you look facing all this unpredictable data pattern coming in, you know, there's really issues. If you look at those darkened area, that's where you overcommit, right? That's where your request really doesn't, you really don't need that much capacity, but you have bought it, right? And so that's overcommit. So that's a waste of money. Let me tell you, your CFO will get really upset. You know, you spend all this money, but hey, you're a machine sitting there idling and no utilization. Now, at the same time, there are times that perhaps you undercommit. That's all this red area that you don't have enough capability. You don't have enough capacity. And that's when the opportunity arrived, right? Maybe the market is going, and then your opportunities arrive, but you cannot fulfill it. Right? In that case, look, you're going to ruin your CEO's Monday afternoon golf ball game. It's going to get really upset. And you never know. You know what? If I were you facing this kind of situation, probably should get your resume ready. Could it be a resume trigger event? You may get a letter saying, you know what? it's great, but I think you should find somewhere else to really kind of reach your potential. I mean, this is probably not your place, because this kind of things, we cannot afford it anymore. Because today, if you look at the IT over a year, the budget kept coming down. The expectation is going high. At the same time, you're constantly struggling, trying to deliver more, faster, better, cheaper, but with less budget. So this kind of things, it's critical. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, lost business opportunities or wasted money. And I think with a lot of organizations looking at DevOps and pressuring their development teams into quicker and quicker solution release cycles and their operations teams into being able to adapt to these kinds of challenges, how does a cloud approach really help us?
Well, you see, that's interesting you're talking about, because all this traditional models can no longer fit. And people kind of scratching their heads saying, why this is happening? Why the way we did business before no longer good today? Well, here's the reason. Really, if you look at the data pattern that's happening today, Doug, we carry a mobile phone, which is a data entry device. At home, you got Xbox, right? You got different computing devices. They can all do data I.O., right? And then you may be watching movies, sending email, writing your blog post, and publishing your stuff. I mean, multiple things at the same time. They have just massive data traffic going on, not to mention in the industry, right? Everything is so dynamic. So you look in those data patterns, the traditional is kind of on or off. Now, the magnitude can be very drastic, right? So how do you plan your capacity? Do you plan you're going to fulfill it all the time? Or what happened when there's no activity, right? So this kind of on and off pattern, it become an issue, because you can no longer dedicate that much capacity and use it not continuously but periodically, right?
Yeah,
so that's not good.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, some of those applications organizations have been wrestling with for quite a while. And you think about the traditional organization that does batch processing, month-end processing, quarter-end processing, you know, all those are workloads that probably organizations are paying 24/7, round the clock, capacity in their on-premises data center today, where, you know, maybe moving those up to the cloud, they could save a lot of money and be able to scale them to the level needed for that month-end processing, yeah.
Right. And you know, another phenomenon is the continuously grow.
Yeah.
For instance, Keith, that's your email inbox. Continue to grow, right? Keith, that is your movie collection. Or continue to grow. So that is your photo collection, right? You go everywhere, take pictures, right? That's what happened. And the same thing in the enterprise is the same thing. You know, all the data that we have, all the virtual machine we have, all this media that we keep, right? All those records, all those documents. So the requirements continue to grow. You look at our email inbox. Years ago, it was like, 20 meg, then 40 meg, and then recently become 5 gig, 20 gig. Now I don't know how big, a couple hundred gig, I guess. So in terms of capacity planning, how are you going to face this continued growth? It's endless, right? So you cannot just continue to keep buying hardware and, you know, expanding your storage. There's got to be a better solution for this kind of things.
Right. Sprawl as a service is what I call that.
Yeah, you got to find a different solution. Another
right.
thing is that this kind of unpredictable demand. For instance, something happened, right, and everybody rushed to it. I mean, I can give you a couple of examples. You know, in the international world, this is to like global economy, something happened. Everybody rushed to media, you know, try to watch news, try to read what's going on, try to, you know, consume all those media that's available, and then it comes and goes. So this kind of bursting effect is happening, like, you know, every so often. And then how do you plan the capacity? If you are, for instance, if you are a media company, right, now you get this great story that you have to report it out, everybody's trying to consume, are you able to dynamically provide that capability, right? Or, for instance, this could be Super Bowl broadcasting, right? When it broadcasts, suddenly we have everybody watching. I'm watching with my phone. I'm maybe in a subway. I'm watching it, right? So you have this so many consumer trying to consume your service. And then when the broadcast is finished, and then you no longer need that much bandwidth, right? So these kind of things, it's happening today, and it's a part of our life. And then as an IT, how are you going to plan that bursting capacity needs, right? And these are all very realistic and challenging. And also, and
I hear some organizations actually thinking about, you know, a lot of IT organizations have historically thought about unpredictable demand in a negative way, as a denial of service type of situation or whatnot, right? You're right. It's a lost business opportunity if you can't meet those unpredictable demands in today's growing and evolving economy. I mean, it's something that you just can't plan in that same way. You're absolutely right.
That's right. And you know what? If you can't fulfill it, I'm going to somewhere else. And then you're going to lose your opportunity, right? Yeah. Another thing is, as a global economy grows, that's, you know, you have this kind of cyclic type of workload or demand coming in. For instance, if I'm a global company, let's say I just acquire a company in Asia Pacific, right? So let's say that's part of my company. And so this whole company now, if we are working in the U.S., they are probably sleeping. If they are working and then we are sleeping. So when you plan your capacity, when you plan your computing infrastructure and all that, where do you put it? Do I put it in Asia Pacific or do I put it in US, right? And it could be vice versa. You've been bought by other company or your company is growing. So at some point of time, that maybe you need to geographically relocate your computing capability or the demographic or your customer changes. All kinds of situation can happen. You got to have that capability to be able to dynamically kind of make your computing capability really location transparent, right? And so all this is what we're facing. This is why your traditional capacity planning can no longer work. Keith, take my word. It will not work. You got to change. You need to change.
Well, and the upside of that change, I know change can have a very negative connotation in certain conversations, but the upside of adapting to that change is being able to unlock new opportunities for your organization where you can harness nearly infinite capacity by leveraging cloud resources, right?
Well, I tell you, Keith, what you need is the following. Let's say if this is your actual workload coming in, and what you need is this magical knob, right? And then as requests or capacity demand increase, you can kind of tune it up accordingly, right? And increase your capacity dynamically. And when you don't need it, right? And you can decrease it. The decreasing is actually very significant because traditionally, if you buy the hardware, then you kind of commit it to it, right? You also have to commit it up front. With this kind of thing, if you get this magic knob, then you can, hey, come and go. When I need more, I tune it up. When I don't need it, I, you know, decrease it. So that's really what we need in today's world. Facing all the data pattern that we talk about, this is what we need. We need this magic knob. Can give us capacity on demand. In this case, you know, you never know. You probably get that promotion. You get that big office with that big screen that you've been asking for.
Well, and you're absolutely right. You know, scaling down in the on-premises world traditionally is something that nobody ever does, right? Because it's nearly impossible to scale down. It's doable to scale up, nearly impossible to scale down. But what that scaling down on one workload gives us is the ability to dynamically move that IT investment now to support other application workloads where scaling those up at the same time that we're scaling this one down can have a positive effect on the business organization, right? So being able to elastically and agilely move those resources around.
And you talk about DevOps, this is really We're talking about the whole application, which include the application architecture, right?
Yeah.
So this is really dev and ops all together. I need to be able to magically, right, as needed, increase my capacity, which also involve what's happening behind the scene, all those infrastructure, those virtual machines, those storage, those network capacity, all that. At the same time, I also need to be able to deploy our application. So this is the perfect DevOps opportunity for us to be able to scale up as needed, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to monitor and do magical thing.
It all sounds very magical. Can we, maybe it would be helpful, can we switch over and pop into the lab together and take a look at some of these aspects ourselves?
Well, I'll tell you what, Keith, just because I like you, so I'm going to show you all the magic behind the scene.
We'll be able to see what's going on behind the curtain, huh?
There you go.
Well, those evolving cloud patterns, Young, are really interesting and really pressing the way for us to think about capacity in new ways. Now, I know when we start thinking about capacity, even traditionally, oftentimes we need to think about how we load balance applications across multiple instances and use that either for availability or additional capacity if we need to balance requests across a number of images. How does load balancing work on the Azure platform?
Well, you know what, Keith? Normally, I don't tell people about this, but because I like you, so I'm gonna let you know. Well, you know, you bring up a good point, because if you look at today's application, the traditional web application at the front end, normally we're load balanced, right? And if you think about when we're doing on-premises deployment, when you do the load balance, it's quite a task, right? Not only you need to get perhaps third-party either hardware solution or however you want to do it, this is really quite involved, right? Now, the good news about cloud computing is everything's logical because we operate above fabric, above the virtualization layer. So even for load balancing, it becomes really a routine and very easy to do. So let me show you what I have here. At this time, this is Windows Azure Management Portal, and I have authenticated in already. At this time, I have deployed 4 virtual machines. And all these 4 virtual machines, if you look at their configuration, particularly, I want to look at their endpoints. So I'm looking at the dashboard, and I'm going to the endpoints. The endpoints, actually, if you look at the screen, there's a definition that's right in front of you. Because if you look at the documentation, you say, what is the endpoint in Windows Azure? The endpoint is a pair of ports, that is public port and private port.
So it's sort of like a firewall rule.
That's right. So it's a pair of public port and private port with a specific protocol and a name. So that's an endpoint. So at this time, I have configured an endpoint, and it's on port 80, both public side and the private side on TCP. So basically, we're passing this all the way through into our service, which I'll get into that. But the significance of this is we also create a load balance set of it. And I have, at this time, added the 3 virtual machine into the same load balance set. Now, traditionally, if you do it on-premises solution, and you can think about it when you do load balancing, what kind of tedious work that you go through and how long does it take? In cloud computing, it's actually very, very easy. What you do is you create an endpoint, and then you simply say you want to create a load balance set. So that was it. You give it a protocol, whatever the protocol you want to use, and you know, chance we do TCP, and then the particular port on the public side and the private side you specify, and you simply say you want to create a load balance set, and that's it. And then when you finish, then you will have a load balance set that's ready. So which means all those virtual machine that you reference this load balance set or you join this load balance set are basically in a load balance scenario that Windows Azure set it up. And we do simple round robin type of load balancing. And so it's very easy to do. You know, you can finish this whole thing probably in a minute or two.
What happens if, so you mentioned that we do simple round robin load balancing. What happens if we need something more complex, maybe for an older application that requires either sticky session support or perhaps more advanced load balancing logic at an application level?
Well, this part, Keith, I think you actually know more than I do. Why don't you tell us about it?
Okay. Well, so there's a couple options, right? I mean, obviously, in a cloud world, we're trying to scale things up as quickly as possible. You had made a point a little earlier about DevOps and the development teams architecting applications for kind of the cloud stateless world. And so for new applications, we use round robin in Azure because we expect that more and more dev teams are going to be developing stateless applications where those more advanced load balancing algorithms aren't needed. But there's a lot of legacy applications out there as well. And so if you're moving those to the cloud, there's a couple options. You know, instead of using the Azure built-in load balancing, if you need more than just round robin, you could certainly leverage IIS inside of a Windows VM, Windows Server VM. IIS has a great free add-in called Application Request Routing, or ARR, that provides the ability to do basic sticky session support for those applications. Down at the bottom of the page, you'll find a link to an article that actually will give you the pros and cons and walk through that by one of our other evangelists in the field, Brian Prince. So I encourage you to check that out. In addition to that, though, we're seeing really great interest from third-party OEM partners that have their own load balancing appliances. Kemp, for instance, as an example. Kemp's been in the load balancing industry for years and years. They have a number of different load balancing appliances that organizations use on premises. And they actually make a free virtual load balancer. You can download it from the VM Depot right in the Azure portal that provides all of their advanced load balancing logic as an Azure VM. And you can pair it up with a couple VMs if you want high availability for your load balancing, but it provides you with layer 4 through 7 load balancing, SSL offloading, sticky session support, a lot of the advanced features that organizations have used for their traditional on-premises applications. So that's a great solution if you have some of these applications you're trying to move out to the cloud.
Right. Now, in terms of the session management, and this is actually a very good discussion here, we get a lot of questions, people asking, well, you know, Young, what you just showed, that's great, but what kind of, what happened to my sticky session? Now, you presented a lot of solutions. I think in the long run, what enterprise needs to do is, as they architect their cloud solution, their cloud application, the front end really needs to be stateless. And in Windows Azure, there's also different artifact to help you to be able to manage states, not within the traditional sticky session model. There's also different data structure or different type of storage, if you will. Help you, for instance, we have queue, we have table, we have different storage help you to manage that. The queue particularly is for application communication, and there's a lot of session management. You can go through that route as well. So for the application piece, you know, you presented kind of a quick solution that you can actually migrate to cloud very quickly using sort of like an IIS type of thing, a solution. You can just, you know, you can put take advantage of IIS and then put the whole environment there, and you can kind of quickly transition into cloud computing. This is really more for kind of a simple front end, right? And then you really just want to take the request coming in as fast as you can. This gives you a way to easily load balance your front end. And I think it's a particular scenario is targeting, and it's very efficient.
Great. Oh, that's awesome. Definitely. Yeah. So leveraging, sounds like there's several options in Azure between queuing and table storage or even SQL Azure database as a platform service, to move that some of that persistent state information out of the application layer and into the data layer behind the applications.
Right. One important concept about cloud computing is really in the cloud, it's really about the service. So this virtual machine, really, they by themselves, really, they don't mean that much. It's really about the service. What I mean is the following. If we look at the service that we created, which within the service, if I look at the instance, I actually have all this virtual machine together to support this whole service. So your user will come in, access this URL, which is the service name, and then all this, currently these three virtual machines that I put in load balancer will fulfill the request. And then it's very easy to add additional one. For instance, if I need to add another machine into my front end, I can actually use the add the number 4. Let me show you how you can do that very quickly. So from here, you can actually get into the endpoint piece, and this is the number 4. I don't have any endpoints open. I'm just going to add an endpoint. At this time, I just want to add an endpoint and add it into existing load balance set, which is the one I create. Now, I only have one at this time. Otherwise, you can have a drop-down list, and you can pick and choose depending on which load balance set you're going to join. And so I click next and I give it a name. I'm going to give it the same name called HTTP. I'm going to keep the rest the same and I want to reconfigure it. Right? And I'm going to keep the rest the same and I'm OK it and that's it. That's it. It takes seconds and then this machine will be part of the load balance set. Now, if we go back to the service, this is our actually remote URL that you can access your application. Here I have a simple page. If I keep refreshing it, hopefully at some point in time I can hit number 4. That's the one that just joined.
And so those changes that you just stepped through and adding IIS VM number 4, that's a great example of being able to manually scale out the capacity of an existing application. It was so easy with just a few clicks and adding it into an existing load balance set. How do we know that load balancing, though, how do we know that all of our instances are working and the load balancing is working? Is there any type of monitoring capability that gives us the ability to have insight into that?
That's a good point. So you have this service up and running. It's great in, you know, you put in a load balancer and all that, but you really want to know, is it available, right? You really want to have a monitoring capability to see if your user can access your application and all that. So here's how we can get to it. Let's look at the detail of just any virtual machine within the service, and let's go to configure. And if you scroll down a little bit, you actually see here's the monitoring entry. I have created one already. To create one, it's real simple. First, you select your location. Now, Windows Azure provides you several locations, and you can monitor actually from 3 external locations to your endpoint, which is your service. So, for instance,
that's really cool because I know a lot of organizations have kind of an increasingly global audience of users for their applications. And oftentimes, they don't have the visibility to be able to monitor their availability and probably even latency of their application requests from all these different locations. That's really cool. So, we're using the Azure data centers to monitor these applications worldwide. Is that right?
Yes, and these are the external points that we can access. For instance, like you know, you sounds like you're in a European mode today. So maybe let's just pick Amsterdam and Dublin, and then we pick that, and let's give it a name. I'm going to call it EU, how's that? And I'm going to save it, and that's it. Now, I have just set up a 2 monitoring location from Europe. Let's say this application is serving my majority customers coming from Europe, so I care about my European customer. Can they access this application or not? Regardless where I deploy this application, I want to know. So this can monitor that to make sure that it's accessible, and every so often, it will ping, and if you get a return call bigger than HTTP 400 or the response time, you know, longer than 30 seconds, it can send out alerts and warning. And so this is really easy. And not to mention, we did it with a couple clicks. So just imagine if you have to do this yourself, do it sort of like an on-premises type of deployment. This is just unthinkable.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And you had mentioned that we can tie this into an alerting system. Where would we go to see or configure those alerts?
There you go. So you have the service endpoint. You are able to load balance it. And now you have something to monitor it. Well, when you monitor if something happened, you want to know. So what we need next is really an alert system, which in Windows Azure, this actually have a service workspace that you can take a look. It's called Managed Services. And from here, you can actually add different rules. For instance, let's just add a rule right now. We're going to call it, if I'm going to call it, let's say, availability. Right? And let's say I want to see it EU. I'm going to call it EU. And that's my service. So all this are good. I'm going to do it next. From here, there's a different criteria. What do you want to monitor? For this particular one, I want to look at the uptime, or I want to look at the uptime. Let's see.
And so the uptime and response time, those are tying back to that endpoint monitoring.
That's right, to the endpoint. And there's other things you can monitor as well.
Cool.
right? So, or we can, you know, let's say network out. You know, you have different criteria, so it's based upon what you need, what you want to monitor. Here, I'm just going to pick one, just for demonstration. And then you can certainly set up different threshold. And here, I'm going to say, you know what, the uptime, if it's less than 100%, I want to know. In other words, I want 100% uptime, right? And if something goes wrong, send an email to Keith, who is my administrator. I'm going to send another email to Keith's private email. So, but basically, you know what I mean. You can set up different things, and you can go ahead and enable rule, and I'm going to click OK. That will enable this rule for me. Nice. So in other words, it will monitor this service, and based upon your criteria here, if it's another uptime, it will send out alerts. And all this, just a matter of clicking, it's all become an all logical process as opposed to involve any physical aspect of it. It's just tremendous. It's unbelievable that you are really operating in a global scale with global infrastructure all at our fingertips.
Yeah, that is awesome. And I think so far from what we've covered, I think we're almost to nirvana for IT pros, right? Because we've got the ability to very easily scale up and scale down by adding or removing VMs from a load balance set. We've got the ability to monitor it and get alerts on it so that we can see when we get those unpredictable spikes in utilization, we get an alert and we can go in and add or remove the VMs from our load balance set when we need to. But is that last mile, I think, is connecting that back into our cloud automatically. Is there any way that we can automatically have Azure just, instead of sending us an alert, which is cool in and of itself, but going that extra step of saying, hey, if I'm hitting these utilization levels, let me automatically add and remove virtual machines or roles from our load balance sets. Is there any support for anything like that?
Boy, aren't you a picky person? But you're right. You're right. We're almost there, right? So you have a service. You can load balance it. You can monitor it. You can send out alerts. But what do you want the alert for? You want to be able to act on it, right? So if you get an alert saying, you know what, the response time is just terribly slow. Why? Because we have too many users. We need more capacity or things like that, right? That's what this alert's about. So the final, you know, up to the last moment, say, you know, you get the alert, then what are you doing? You want to be able to scale up or scale down, right? Depends what the scenario is. So what we want is we are actually touching that magical knob here, right? So from the service, if you look at the scale, Windows Azure actually provides you capability to set different threshold to auto-scale your application or your service, if you will. For instance, here it says, you know, I can scale from one virtual machine all the way to four virtual machines. So based upon your need, right, easy to change, and the target CPU. Now, this may not be optimal or based upon your application. What I did here is I kind of shrink it down here just so I can demo it. But in reality, normally you want to keep it perhaps like 60, 70 type of percent utilization and maybe, you know, 40, 50. It depends on your application. So you do need to do some study on it. And this is why IT Pro today, rather than plugging in cable, your value now is really more on the operational analysis, right? So what is the right number for this particular application or at the particular time or whatever your criteria is? And also, when you scale up, you know, how often you want to perform this type of operation, and also how many instances you want to do it at a time. You certainly need to have a multiple instance. For instance, the front end, you need to have the multiple virtual machine in order for this to work. And normally, you know, you will have your, based upon your data, based upon your requirement, you will set up the optimal time. For demo, I'm just going to set it 5 minutes, so maybe we'll have a chance to actually see the scale up or scale down operations for us. So basically, that's how you do. So these criteria, that's what IT Pro I see today can really add value, is to provide analysis on this and kind of set up the optimal criteria, how you want to scale up or scale down.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, the way that this is designed to work is, as an IT pro, when I'm ready to deploy my application into Azure, I build out the number of virtual machine instances as part of this cloud service and configure my load balance set. If I wanted to scale up to maybe a max of 10, I'd build out all 10 initially, and then I'd come in here and set my high and low watermarks for CPU utilization, minimum, maximum instances, things of that nature. And what's Azure doing? Is it like turning off those VMs that it doesn't need and then turning them back on when it needs it? Is that what it's doing when it's scaling up? Down.
Once you set the auto scaling, that is actually Azure will do that. In fact, it will do actually more than that. It will actually tell you how much it has helped you to save money, believe it or not. Yes, it actually will have some information that for you. Now, at this time, you know what? I'm going to demo that for you. So what I'm doing is I'm shutting down one of the virtual machine here. And I have set up the auto scaling already. So what I'm going to do now is I want to access the service, and which is our basic simple web page here. And as you know, like, we have load balancing, right? So as I refresh, it will go to different pages. And what I want to do now is I have a little tools here. I'm going to generate some workload for the machine, and we are going to see how Azure can auto scale up for us. So I'm going to generate the workload. Okay, so now we have generated the load. And so in the next few minutes, the machine's going to be extremely busy. And so as we go back, and momentarily, well, really not momentarily, probably in a minute or two, once we the autoscale had a chance to really collect the data, and then in the next opportunity, it will go ahead and kick off the machine for us. So we can actually go ahead and look at the service. If we look at the statistics of what happened in the past some time, you can see all the threshold that I have set up. There's a significance of all these points that it's telling us, right? This is CPU percentage, and if we look at this one, right, it's over 50. I think this is response time. This is one of the monitoring that I set up. And so all this kind of give us some insight in terms of what's happening in our services. And then as we set up the auto-scaling, what it will do is all this information, once it gather, once it had a chance to kind of see what's going on, it will respond based upon the criteria you set up. And so in the next opportunity, it had a chance to kind of resynthesize the what's happening there, and it will react accordingly. So what we're looking for is really at some point in time that it should kick off this virtual machine for us.
Right, right. Yep, and so we've basically got capacity on demand when we need it, automatically getting spun up or spun down to follow that line of real utilization that we're seeing each point in time throughout our application's usage lifecycle, right?
Right, and if you look at all this capability that Windows Azure is providing us, there's so many different scenario and opportunity now. Not to mention production, but how about your testing? How about your prototyping? How about if you're writing an application? Let's say you're writing an application, you want to know how it can scale up and scale down. You want to test the performance. Windows Azure actually provides an excellent and very cost-efficient facility for us to do this kind of testing. So if you look at the entire DevOps cycle, right, it's not just in the production, but also development and perhaps, you know, verification, perhaps QA. There's a different opportunity. We can all use Windows Azure to help us deliver a better service, make a better application better. Well, how about that, Keith? It's starting. It's kicking off my second virtual machine. How about that?
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. It is almost magical.
I tell you what, we're not going to wait until it finishes. Let me just go back to some of the history to show you what's happening. This is the management services operational log, and I want to show you. And from here, if I go ahead and look at what, because I have some operation previously that I can share with you. I scroll down here, is the last time when it does the auto scaling. And if I look at the details, and we scroll down a little bit, and let's look at this, the description here, see? It's growing from 2 instance to 3 instance count. So this is what happened last time when it does the auto scale.
So that's really nice. It's not only telling, it's not only doing the action for you, but it'll report on it so that you can confirm when it's auto scaling up or when it's auto scaling down. That's really nice from an operational perspective.
Right, and so you have the records, and then you can, you know, you kind of have the operational log knows what's going on. But the auto scaling is pretty cool. Now, if you look at what we have talked about in the last 15-20 minutes, there's really whole methodology in terms of the auto, you know, automation piece on the scaling piece, right? The auto scaling piece. What am I trying to say? So if you look at that, we started with this 4 virtual machine that I deployed out, and they are actually serving a service, right? So I was able to really dynamically edit additional virtual machine to do the load balancing, right? To kind of increase the capacity of the front end. Now for the services that we have, we can also set up an endpoint monitoring to do that. And remember I set up a few location. That's in the configuration piece. Remember, we set up a geographic location to actually monitor to monitor the service that we have. And so you can monitor it, but then you want to know if something goes wrong, you want to be notified. So we're going to set up alerts, which is where we go to the managed services. We set up the alerts for that. And then it will create rules and will create new alerts. So once you get the alerts, you want to be able to act on it. In fact, we want to be able to automatically act on it. So in the services, we can also set up the auto scaling, right? So based upon the criteria you set up, and then the service will respond accordingly, which is pretty exciting stuff. All this, Keith, I didn't plug in a single cable. I just clicked it. So right. This is truly something I think IT really need to rethink, right? As we move into this cloud computing era, DevOps become increasingly critical for our day-to-day operation. We really need to kind of think about these kind of strategic thing and move into a cloud computing and take advantage of it, make it work for us.
Yeah, definitely. It's very empowering from an IT pro standpoint to have this kind of capacity available to us really at our fingertips. So that's great. Well, what do you say, Jan? Why don't we head back over to the office and we will finish up our episode.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Well, Jan, thanks so much for joining us today as my co-host on talking about scaling cloud applications. That was really informative and I really enjoyed our discussion.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Keith. Cloud computing, auto scaling, go, go, go.
It's awesome. Yeah, definitely. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today as well. Pleasure. It was a pleasure having you all tuned in today. Hope you'll join us for a future episode of TechNet Radio in our DevOps series. And now that you're done with this episode, be sure to check out the additional resources that are down at the bottom of the page that you're watching this video on. You'll find a link to our DevOps blog series that Young and I and several other authors throughout Microsoft have been contributing to over the past few months. In addition, you'll find some great videos on auto scaling and a step-by-step tutorial on advanced load balancing with Azure as well from our good friend Brian Prince on our US team too. So hope to see you back for another episode of TechNet Radio, Accelerating DevOps from the Cloud. Thanks everyone for joining today.
Thank you.